If you are looking for a large tree-like plant structure for your home, might I suggest the rubber plant? If you are looking for a pop of color in your home, might I suggest the rubber plant? If you are looking for a very cool and structural plant for your home, might I suggest the rubber plant, plant friends? Ficus elastica, a statement plant that can go totally underrated in the world of plants, is what we are celebrating today. I have gone back into the archives for the Best of Growing Joy series and pulled a conversation that I had with Raphael from Ohio Tropics, a fellow rubber plant lover, where we uncover why rubber plants deserve way more hype, but more importantly, how to make sure that they truly thrive, how to make sure that they don't drop their leaves, how to make sure that they don't crisp up, because these green or variegated, glossy, huge leaves can make such a statement in your home. They're one of my favorite plants that I have in my green wall, my Ficus Belize, but also that simple green Ficus elastica is just so darn appealing. So in this conversation, you're going to learn simple care tips, but most importantly, Raphael's most common mistakes that he sees his audience make and how to avoid them. And most importantly, how to have an iconic tree in your home via the rubber plant.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. Raphael, welcome finally.
Thank you so much. I love your podcast.
I have been following you for a long time. I kind of can't believe when you hopped on this call, I said, I kind of can't believe we've not had you on the show earlier and that you and I haven't become plant friends earlier. I don't understand it.
We are now. You can't get rid of me now.
Exactly. We are now. And I feel like we just shared the most intimate moment together when we hopped on our Zoom call. Your book had just arrived and
yes.
I got to just share in your joy for a minute. That's amazing.
Thank you so much. It literally came 15 minutes before we started talking. So I saw the boxes outside and I ran and got them.
Oh my gosh, especially in the snow, right?
Yes.
So exciting. We're both coming out with books this spring season. And I can just so relate to just anxiously awaiting that moment. So congrats and can't wait to hear more about your book in a little bit.
Thank you.
But I'm so excited to chat with you today about a plant that I feel like is so underrated in the plant community, often overlooked, but really cool, the rubber plant.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always say that everybody wants to get the rare plants all the time. And like you said, rubber plants are kind of neglected. I feel like the variegated varieties are bringing them back. But I just have a plain old green rubber plant that I've had for years, and that's reached my ceiling. And a lot of people grow them, but there's also a lot of struggles too that people have.
Absolutely. And I can't wait. You have been kind enough to send me a list of your commonly asked questions. I can't wait to dive in, but you have all of these commonly asked questions because you are the man behind Ohio Tropics, a huge blog. So do you want to give our listeners a brief introduction to how you became the plant dad you are today?
Yes. So it's an interesting story, actually, as all these things are, I think. So one day about a little, almost 5 years ago, I got a call from a friend that had moved from the West Coast to the Northeast Ohio area. So I'm in the Cleveland area. And she said, you need to start a blog. She said, you have all this plant knowledge. And I was following this one lady back home on the West Coast. And she shared tips on when to do things, how to do things in your garden. And she said, you have all this knowledge. You have to share it. Why don't you start a blog? And I told her I've always wanted to, but I just never got around to it. Mm-hmm. And the way I operate is when something clicks and I get excited about it, I go full force. I take off. And the next day I started my blog. So I started Ohio Tropics, ohiotropics.com. And initially the blog was focused on gardening with a tropical flair in cold weather climates. And so I initially started that way. And I also talked about orchids a lot, but it segued into houseplants. And right now, you know, and that continues to be the majority of my content. It's focused on houseplant care. So that was almost 5 years ago that I started it.
You have the jungliest Zoom background, an enormous Pachyra aquatica, numerous. I will describe it for listeners. You're sitting in this beautiful room in what is obviously a very snowy location, but you have a huge Pachyra aquatica, big monsteras, all sorts of moss poles, all sorts of dangling plants, Philodendron Brazil, it looks like back there. Some really lush trailing plants. Yeah. And that's interesting. I like the, you know, Ohio, you obviously think of being like the coldest place in the United States. So it's fun that you have, you focused on tropics and create that. I think we've all related to, if we live in some place that's cold, there's something so cool about looking at your window when it's snowing and having the outlines of your monstera or your houseplants against that snowy backdrop. I think it's so cool.
It's the best. It really is. It makes me feel better.
Yeah. And you're coming out with a new book, Houseplant Warrior, which I'm so excited to hear more about after we dive into the goods of the rubber plant.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, rubber plants, I said they're so underutilized, they're so underrated, because here's what I think about rubber plants. And ironically, I don't have a rubber plant right now in my collection. So
oh my gosh, you need one.
I know, I'm speaking so authoritatively about them, but I think that they're great. Number one, they can be hardy if you put them in the right setup. Number two, you can buy them in a 4-inch pot, or they can grow to be trees. Like, so many people struggle wanting really big plants in their space, and rubber plants are great. Great option. Also, they really come in so many beautiful variegated varieties, which is why, like you said, they're coming back into popularity. But I feel like they're like an unsung hero of your basic houseplant collection, you know?
I totally agree with that. Absolutely.
So I love diving more into Plant Latin on Bloom and Grow Radio. We hear rubber plant is the common name. So do you want to break down what is a rubber plant?
Sure. So Ficus elastica is the botanical name. And actually, it's related to a lot of other houseplants that we grow and also some edible plants. So it actually, Ficus elastica belongs to the Moraceae plant family, which is commonly called, it's sometimes called the mulberry plant family, sometimes called the fig family. I call it the fig family. And it actually is related to the fig that we eat. I don't know if you like fresh figs.
Oh yeah,
I have one in my garden, and it's unfortunately I'm a huge procrastinator. It's buried in snow. I should have covered it. It will grow back from the roots, so I could have saved the canes if I covered it. But anyway, it's related to the edible fig. It's related to the mulberry tree, which has edible fruit. And talking about houseplants, so it's also related to there's a lot of other ficus, the fiddle leaf fig, Ficus lyrata. Obviously, you know, that's a different species of ficus. And then also Ficus, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Ficus audrey. So Ficus bengalensis, if I'm pronouncing that. Mm-hmm. So that's actually Ficus audrey, and it's the strangler fig that, you know, many of us may have heard, or banyan tree is a common name for that. So the interesting part about Ficus elastica, the reason where the species name comes from is because of the latex that oozes out. I know you said you don't have a rubber tree, but for anyone listening, if you've ever cut a branch or, you know, snapped the leaf off or anything like that, you see this white latex oozing out and dripping all over the place. It used to be used to make rubber. However, it was pretty inferior in quality. And so they eventually came up with another plant, Hevea brasiliensis, which is a tree that we now get natural rubber from. Basically, that's in a nutshell, you know, that's the origin.
And for anyone listening, that latex is toxic, right?
It is. Yeah, it's a skin irritant. So be careful if you wear gloves, if you're handling it, if you're pruning your plant or doing something like that, or if you get it on your skin, go ahead and wash it off really quickly. It is also toxic to pets as well. So just be careful.
Yeah, be careful around your puppies and your kittens. We've had several episodes on plants and cats, and it's so interesting hearing how people decorate and avoid, you know, pet damage to plants.
Yep.
So what about in nature? Where do these plants thrive in nature?
So their native range is Nepal, China, and Malaysia, typically. Mm-hmm. You'll see them growing if I don't know how much you travel at all to warmer areas. We like to travel. So they're native to Southeast Asia, but they can grow in any warm climate. Mm-hmm. I've seen, you know, beautiful specimens in Florida. I was just actually in the Virgin Islands and saw them growing outside there in full sun. In Mexico, I've seen a lot of them growing in Mexico, and they get huge. They get, you know, they're 100-foot tall trees.
Yeah.
In nature, they get really big.
I recently just went on my honeymoon in Costa Rica, and my husband kept making fun of me because I kept making him take selfies with these enormous rubber trees. And they had, you know, the other thing that's so cool about rubber plants, Ficus elastica, so many of their new growth is pink. And so many of these different rubber trees I was seeing or rubber plants I was seeing just had the most gorgeous, like, you know, juvenile foliage. And yeah, we have selfies all over Costa Rica with plants.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Some of the variegated varieties have the pinkish newer leaves and sometimes they fade, but they're beautiful.
And stems too, yeah.
And the sheaths that, you know, that cover the new leaves, some of them are nice, bright red. They're beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. Unsung once again. So let's talk about the different types of rubber plants. I do feel like you've got your basic, you mentioned you have your basic green one that, you know, you see in the hardware stores and at most plant shops. So can you kind of walk us through all the different types of varieties?
Yeah. And there's probably more than this. I can't keep up with all the newer varieties coming up, but the ones I'm about to talk about or mention are the ones that you'll commonly see, you know, for the most part. So there's a couple. If we want to put them in two buckets, we have just the non-variegated rubber plants and then the variegated rubber plants. So the most commonly available non-variegated ones, Ficus elastica decora, and that used to be, I think that was probably the most common variety before this huge plant craze lately. You know, the typical green leaves. There's another variety or cultivar called Ficus elastica robusta, which is similar to the decora, but it has larger leaves. And I think mine, the one that I have, I believe is a decora, just judging from the size of the leaves. Of course, it wasn't labeled, you know, they're not always labeled the best when you're purchasing them.
And sometimes they're incorrect as well.
Oh, absolutely. My favorite is, I think one time I saw a label that just said tropical green plant.
Yeah.
Hey, that's helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
And then there's another variety, which I think is stunning. The last non-variegated variety, Ficus elastica burgundy, which has gorgeous, super, super dark, almost black, not quite black, but approaching black. And I think those are beautiful as well.
My God. And that's the one that has those kind of burgundy stems. Like it has that dark. It's so moody. It's such a vibe. It would be such
beautiful.
I feel like in a modern home that's kind of minimalistic, that would be such a beautiful statement plant, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. It has a red midrib on the leaf. And then I think the sheaths are also a nice vibrant red color as well.
Yeah.
And then we have, as far as, you know, the two most popular variegated varieties, Ficus elastica tinicky, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes.
So that has different shades of green and yellow and cream. That's a beautiful one as well. And then there's Ficus elastica ruby, which has a beautiful pink variegation. And that's a gorgeous one. Those are probably the two most common variegated varieties. And there's another one called, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that. I've never heard this pronounced. The cultivar Ficus elastica doscherii.
Okay.
We'll go with that.
You get points for trying. There's no judgment here with how you pronounce your plant Latin.
And that one's similar to the tinicky. I think the leaves are a little bit narrower, but you know, we call them what you want. The care for all of them is the same.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a couple little intricacies with the variegated varieties. However, the care for the most part is identical.
Yeah. We had Chris Satch on the podcast years ago. It's a fantastic episode all about variegation. And it is interesting. I mean, variegated plants need more volume of light than a non-variegated plant, but it's such an interesting deep dive into variegation and why it's so hot right now.
Yeah.
I will say pink plants are so hot. So that last one, I've seen the ruby one like all over the place.
Yeah, that's a beautiful one.
Yeah. And those variegated types, the patterns on their leaves are just so beautiful. It's almost unbelievable to see.
Yeah. And you never know what you'll get. I mean, that's part of the beauty of variegated plants. You never know, you know, what the next leaf is going to look like. It does test people's patience though, because they won't grow as quickly as, you know, their non-variegated counterparts.
Yeah.
And, you know, there might be some frustrations with, you know, if you get a leaf that's not as pink as you wanted, or, mm-hmm. you know, the way that you expect it.
Yeah, totally. So you mentioned general care. Pretty much for all of these plants, we can take one generalized approach, obviously with a few exceptions. So why don't we go over general basic rubber plant care? Do we want to start with water?
Sure, we can start with watering. So watering, so I actually have a funny, not a funny story, kind of a sad story. And I don't know what your thoughts are about moisture meters. I'm not a proponent of moisture meters. I'm not saying don't use one. You just have to be careful. And I had a friend reach out to me and she said, oh, my rubber plant's suffering and it looks really bad. Can you help me with it? I said, sure. And anytime anyone reaches out to me, I always tell them, please send me a picture. Please send me a picture. And I can tell oftentimes from the picture what's going on. She told me she uses, I asked, well, how do you water? She said, well, I use a moisture meter and it's indicating that it's fine and that the potting mix is so moist. And I said, okay. And I said, when was the last time you watered? And she said, it was a few months ago. And I said, oh. And I'm not saying every single moisture meter is faulty, but there are so many junky ones. And my best recommendation, I'm segueing into different topics, but they're all related. When we're talking about watering, your finger is seriously your best friend. Touch your potting mix. It needs to dry out sufficiently. Always, always water thoroughly. Always have a drainage hole. And I use my finger to determine how dry, you know, the potting mix has gotten. So if you have a small pot, let's say a 4-inch pot, I would maybe let the top half inch or so to dry out before watering it again thoroughly. If you have a much bigger pot, so my rubber plant that is probably 9 feet tall right now, it's in a big 15-inch. The diameter of the pot is about 15 inches. And for that size pot, you can wait for, you know, a lot more of it to dry out. So I let at least the top quarter of the soil to dry out before watering it again. That being said,
the top quarter inch or the top quarter of the whole pot?
Of the whole pot.
Okay.
Of the whole pot. And so, you know, I don't measure it out with a ruler or anything like that. I just stick my finger in there. And so, you know, the top 2 or 3 inches, I'll let dry out before I actually water it again.
And then you're giving it like a very thorough water?
And then a very thorough watering, all on the surface. And, no, you know, normally I wait until a tiny bit comes out of the drainage holes and then I stop. If too much of it collects, I'll, you know, especially for a giant pot, what I like to do is I take out my turkey baster. I don't know if you've done this before. And I suck out all the water. I have a dedicated turkey baster that I use.
So funny. That's so clever. I've never done that before, to pull the water out of the saucer.
Yes. If it's too big to move.
Yeah, that's very clever, because you're not supposed to leave it after, you know, you can leave it for like 12 hours or whatever to allow for capillary action. But then after, you got to be sucking that out.
Yes. Otherwise, your soil will stay, you know, much too wet. And then, you know, that can cause issues down the line.
Yeah, that's so clever. So these are drought tolerant plants. We're letting them dry out pretty thoroughly and then giving them a good water again.
But not completely. I would recommend not letting your soil dry out completely.
Okay.
Because, especially for too long. It's okay if they dry out completely. Just don't wait too long. Otherwise, you can have leaves dropping. You can have your lower leaves turning yellow and brown and falling off. That can be caused by, I know we'll get to that later on when we talk about issues with, you know, problems related to the rubber plant. Don't wait too long after it's completely dried out.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive about trying drought tolerance right now, because I went through a phase where I underwatered some plants thinking that I was letting them go through a drought and their roots shriveled up, and then the plant has been in terrible condition because I let that soil dry out so dramatically. So
yes.
These are all learning opportunities. You know, sway on the pendulum, but I thought that was really interesting. So let's talk about light, because light is always such a huge thing.
Yes.
for plant parents.
My gosh. Okay. So for a rubber plant, just as a general rule of thumb, put it in front of a window. I don't care what window you have indoors,
okay.
Because indoors, so you've traveled, you were just in Costa Rica, right? And you said you saw rubber plants growing out in
direct sunlight.
Direct sunlight. If you witness a plant growing in full sunlight outside, that means indoors you cannot overdo it. Mm-hmm. Our light indoors is so much less intense than it is outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cannot overdo light for your rubber plant indoors. Just given it, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And I talk about that in my book as well, in my chapter on light, that there isn't nearly as much light indoors as we think there is. Just by virtue of the fact that we're inside, just by the light going through the window, it automatically gets reduced tremendously. And then the further you get from the window, it dramatically drops off. So pick a window, any window for your rubber plant. Preferably, you want a window that has some direct sun. So if you have, an eastern facing window that gets morning sun, that's beautiful. If you have a western facing window, gets afternoon sun, that's great. If you live in the northern hemisphere and you have a southern window, unobstructed southern window, those tend to get a ton of direct sun. Mm-hmm. That's great too. And a north window, in the northern hemisphere doesn't get any direct sun. That's fine, but you should have it right in front of it. Not off to the side, not 2 feet below, right in front of it, because that makes a huge difference. And, I mentioned the hemisphere. If you're in the southern hemisphere, north and south is reversed, which I thought that was really interesting. Now, when it comes to water, I'm going to tie this into water because this is things work together that way, right? When it comes to water, the more light you have, the quicker your soil is going to dry out because your plant's going to be growing more. Mm-hmm. So if you have plenty of sun, then you have to monitor your plant a lot more frequently because it's going to dry out more.
Yeah.
More quickly, I should say.
It's a great point. I will also say, I think I'll make a radical statement right now, but I think in general, people overestimate how much light that they have indoors.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm a great example of that. When I started caring for plants, when I started Bloom and Grow Radio, I was a total novice, really learning all of these concepts as I was interviewing people. I learned, oh, I have southern-facing windows. That's amazing. I have the best type of light. And I had unobstructed southern-facing windows. It was fantastic. My plants were very happy. But what I didn't realize was how drastically that light gets reduced foot after foot away from my window.
Yes.
And all of my windows were on one side of my apartment. So I was putting plants in almost no light, thinking that I was putting them in medium light or bright indirect light because there was enough light to visibly have the room lit during the day. But the volume of light reaching those plants wasn't nearly enough. For anyone listening who hasn't, I have a free download on my website called Understanding Natural Light. And it's actually the process that I did to learn this lesson. You track your light with a light meter for a few days and I kind of walk you through it.
Yes.
But yeah, I think in general, even if you've got those huge, southern facing windows that I had, once you get 6 inches from that big window, you're still in that medium light area,
It drops off dramatically. I actually have, you'll like this since you brought up your light experiment. In my light chapter in my book, I have a graph showing how quickly the light decays.
That's amazing. And it's remarkable when you look at that science.
It really is. It really is. And it is eye-opening. And I know you brought up the term low light. Oftentimes rubber plants are labeled as low light plants, but they are not. They are not.
Yeah. Just like the snake plant.
Just like the snake plant. And in fact, those are the two examples that I often use when describing, low light plants. But they're going to look sad over time. Mm-hmm. They're going to look sad over time. Rubber plants are not low light plants. They can tolerate it. They can tolerate it if your other conditions are okay, but they will do much better for you. They will grow so much more quickly if you give them plenty of light. And I don't think you can overdo light for these plants indoors.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. And, you could put them in your low light scenario, but it's not going to grow if you want that growth. Right.
Yes.
What about soil? So you talked about, letting the soil get medium dry-esque. What do you recommend for soil?
I mean, any well-draining soil will do. And there's a lot of different combinations and it all depends on, the conditions that you have. For my rubber plant that I have now, when I repotted it, it was probably 5 years ago at this point, I didn't measure everything specifically. But it's mainly, I started off with an all-purpose potting mix. I probably use Miracle-Gro. And then I added some perlite and a little bit of orchid bark as well. And it drains beautifully. It doesn't sit on top. As soon as you start, as soon as I start watering it, it gets absorbed right away. In general, I would say starting off maybe three parts of, you know, your favorite all-purpose potting mix, and then mixing in one part perlite. I think that's a great starting point. And you can add all the other stuff if you want. If you want to add orchid bark, that's fine too. But just be careful that you can overdo adding all these different things.
Yeah. So
the chunkier you make your potting mix, the more frequently you're going to have to water. And I recently, someone emailed me through my blog asking a question about his Monstera Deliciosa. And he said, oh, this was so beautiful. And, you know, it had several leaves. It was beautiful when I got it. And it lost several leaves. They all turned yellow. And he said, I'm afraid I'm killing it. How can I help it? And I said, can you send me a picture? So he sent me a picture. And when I took a look at it, it said everything that I needed to know. It looked like his plant was planted in, his Monstera was planted in mostly orchid bark. And I said, how often are you watering? And I'm not a fan of strict watering schedules, which I can touch on that in a second too. But he said, oh, probably every 10 days to 2 weeks. And I said, given that, you know, it's mostly orchid bark, that your plant probably is completely desiccated and drying out. And you want a balance between moisture retention and drainage.
That's interesting you bring that up. First off, shout out to Espoma Organic. They're one of my sponsors, and I love using their potting mix and then mixing some of their orchid bark. That's like been my new little thing that I do. But I will say, oftentimes I recently got my first Anthurium crystallinum. So I ended up putting some more orchid bark than I normally would because I thought, I am going to overwater this thing because I'm going to be helicopter plant parenting. And sometimes I feel like if you're going to overlove something, if you're someone who wants to water super frequently, that's kind of a hack you could do to kind of encourage that, but also realize, you know, the organic matter in the potting mix is important. So you can't just be putting it in, you know, perlite.
Exactly.
And I feel like that making your own soil mix is so popular now, but it's, there is a too chunky for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Unless you like to water every 2 or 3 days, which if you do, go ahead and do it. But I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to water too frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. So we hit water, light, soil. What about fertilizer for these puppies? Because I know people want them to grow super big.
Yeah. So as far as fertilizer goes, any, you know, pick your favorite fertilizer that you like to use. Any balanced fertilizer would be perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different NPK, you know, formulations for fertilizer, but you can really use any all-purpose houseplant fertilizer. That's fine.
Okay.
What I like to do, there's a couple different options. If you don't like to fertilize frequently, or if you don't like to use liquid fertilizers, you can always use something like a time release fertilizer that you can add to your pot. And, you know, some of them are good for 6 months or, you know, most of the growing season. And, you know, that way you add it once and then you're done for a few months. What I like to do is I use a liquid fertilizer. And I like to water dilutely with every watering. And, you know, that's supposed to, you know, everybody has their own thing. It's supposed to mimic what plants do in nature, right? They get nutrients slowly released to them in the soil from decaying leaves, things like that.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
They're not getting a huge shot of fertilizer. You know, it's slower. So you're giving them a little bit at a time every time you water. So I use that method. So for my fertilizing, I'll add a quarter teaspoon to a half a teaspoon per gallon every time I water. And it could be different depending on what fertilizer you're using, but the label should tell you that if you want to water with every watering, do it that way. If it says, you know, fertilize once a month with a tablespoon, then I would maybe do a quarter of that per gallon every time you water.
Okay.
For example.
Got it. Okay. That's awesome. Thank you. So that's general care. I feel like the big headline is put it in light. And then the subheader is don't overwater it forever plant. So it seems like this could be a very easy to care for plant, but you've said that you get lots and lots of questions about rubber plants. So I love working our way through your common rubber plant questions and having this be a living resource for people. So let's start with, I will ask you, go through this list with you. So the first question, why is my rubber plant not growing?
Light.
Yeah.
Plain and simple, light. So I've had a lot of readers comment on my blog, send me messages on Instagram. My plant's not growing. And literally after several months, they're still not growing. And then when I ask them, you know, where do you have your plant? How far is it from a window? What exposure is it? Oftentimes, you know, it's on the other end of the room from where the window is. Move your plant, light bar none, the top reason why. Mm. So, and like I said, you really can't overdo light. It would be so difficult to overdo the light indoors for this plant as well. You mentioned fertilizer. So if your plant's not growing and you have it in a dark corner, don't think that fertilizer is going to help. It might actually be doing more harm than good. So think of fertilizer as an additional thing that you should be doing with your houseplant care routine after everything else is taken care of, after your plant's in good light, you're watering properly, your plant's growing, and then you can supplement with your fertilizer to make it grow even bigger and faster. But it should not be used as a fix because your plant's not growing. Light is the number one reason why your plant's not growing.
So if it's in light, but you haven't changed the soil or fertilized ever, that's when it's time to try with the fertilizer. Because there's such a hurdle. I think I remember going through this, not fertilizing your plants. And then because fertilizer can be so intimidating, you know, I've talked to people who've never fertilized their plants and they've had plants for 5 years. And at that point, it's like, okay, well, maybe you want to just put a little fertilizer in there just to replenish that soil.
Yes.
Okay. Question number two, how do I get my plant to branch and become bushier instead of tall?
That is a very, very, very common question. So there is actually more than one way to accomplish that. One, and this scares so many people, but you shouldn't be scared. If you've been living with your plant for a while and it looks good, don't be afraid to do this, is to prune it. Just hack it off. Hack it off wherever you want. You know, don't hack it all the way down to the soil, to the pot, but, you know, chop off a good portion of it. And that will force some new branches to start forming. So that's one option. There's another option, actually, that's, I guess you can call it a little bit more advanced. You can propagate and then chop it off and then create a bushier plant. So if you've ever, I don't know if you've ever tried air layering a plant. So it's a great method for very woody plants like rubber plants tend to get, so that you're not stressing out the cutting. If you just prune off a big branch on your rubber plant and it has a big woody stem on it, that cutting is going to be stressed. So if you use a process like air layering, what you're doing is you're allowing roots to form while it's still on the plant. And then once it's rooted, then you can cut it off. So that's another option too.
Can you give a quick breakdown of what air layering is? You don't need to do a tutorial, but just for people who've never heard of it before.
Absolutely. What you're basically going to do is take a sharp knife and you're going to make a cut on a diagonal into your rubber plant trunk. And you're going to go about halfway. So right about halfway through. And then at that point, then you're going to take moist sphagnum moss and you're basically going to shove it in where you cut it, just to prop it open a little bit. And then you're going to wrap that entire area around the stem, around the branch. And then you can take, you know, saran wrap or plastic wrap and wrap it around it and then tie it on both ends. And so over the course of a few months, then it's going to actually send out roots from where you cut it. And then the reason you want to use a clear plastic wrap is that you can actually see the roots once they start growing. And then at that point, then you can just cut it off right under where you conducted the air layering. And then you can pot it up. And then after that, then you've, you know, essentially pruned that part off. And then your original plant, then that'll spur the extra side branches to form as well. So you can kind of do two things at once. You can branch off your original plant and then also propagate it at the same time.
Love that. Yeah. Because pruning off that top, hacking off that top is going to instigate more growth. And then you can root it. That's how I turned many 4-inch plants into 8 or 10-inch plants by rooting and repopping. So that brings us to another one of your follower questions is propagation. What are the best ways to propagate a rubber plant? So do you recommend air layering as your number one?
Yeah. So that's definitely, there are more. So that's number one. And like I said, that works best if you have a really woody plant, if the branches are very woody and you want to propagate, so that will work the best. Although the con is that it's much slower. So it will take a few months. And I do have to say, propagation will also work the best during the active growing season. So if you're doing it in the middle of winter, that may not be the best time to do it. It's not to say that you can't propagate year round. You absolutely can, but you might have less of a success rate and it'll be substantially slower if you're not doing it in the spring or summertime when the plant is actively growing. Besides air layering, another way that you can propagate your rubber plant is you could make individual node cuttings. And so you can, you know, prune off a section of your plant, and then wherever the leaf meets your branch, just trim it off on either end. You know, leave maybe, you know, I don't know, half an inch on either side. So you're basically left with a leaf and then part of the stem, which is where the node is. And then at that point, you can either, I don't know if you're a water propagator or a soil propagator, you can do either one. And you stick it in soil until it starts to grow roots. Or you could just put it directly into potting mix and it'll grow a new plant.
One cup of water next to my weird mad botanist table that I have next to my desk. And right now it has a philodendron pink princess tip cutting, a Monstera Peru, and like three Raphidora tetrasperma cuttings. I just like have an ongoing cup of water and like throw cuttings in all the time.
I love that.
Okay, next question. Why are my new leaves on my plants smaller than the older ones?
It's also a very common question that I get. And, you know, it's happened on mine too. And actually there's at the tip of one of my really big rubber plant, there's a leaf that's probably an inch long. Well, what happened there? So I would say if you just brought your plant home, let's say from a nursery, and you've experienced that, I think there's a number of reasons why that can happen. Number one, you know, our conditions at home are nothing like ideal conditions from the greenhouses that these plants were grown in. That in and of itself could be a cause. Poor lighting is another cause as well. Also your soil moisture. So just poor conditions overall. If you're letting your plant dry out too much as it's developing new leaves, that can also affect the size of the leaves as well. So inconsistent conditions while new leaves are growing can be an issue for your plant, whether it's dealing with light, with your potting mix, moisture, or both.
Okay, awesome. What about dropping leaves, those beautiful, precious, large leaves? It's so sad when they drop to the ground.
It is. And that's a huge one. That also can be caused by several different factors. It often happens when you first bring your rubber plant home. And with a lot of ficus species, they don't like to be moved, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. That's one reason they can drop. Another reason they can drop off is if you bring your plant home and you shove it in a dark corner, you will get leaves dropping off. It's just going to happen. And that's a very common issue because your plant is not going to be able to support all the leaves that it had when it was growing in good conditions. And so the plant's basically shedding some leaves at that point to compensate for the lower light. You can also get leaf drop too from your soil drying out too much for too long as well. Or if you have a combination of all of the above. And one thing also that also comes to mind is, I don't know why this is the case, but and maybe you've seen this when you're buying plants in a nursery. A lot of times I've noticed rubber plants that, you know, in larger containers, you know, maybe gallon size containers, and they're horribly root bound. Mm-hmm. They're horribly root bound. You touch the top, you touch the surface, and it's all roots. Mm-hmm. And so in that case too, if your plant is horribly root bound, you're not going to be able to keep the roots hydrated enough. It's going to be very hard to keep up with the watering. And so that coupled with, if you have a fear of overwatering, or I call it overwatering, and that's actually a trigger word for me. I haven't told you this yet. It's a trigger word. And I have a section in my book dedicated to the word overwatering because it leads to so many misconceptions and it leads to a fear of watering properly. Mm-hmm. So if your plant is horribly root bound, it's going to be really difficult to keep it hydrated. And so you really need to put it in a bigger pot at that point, because otherwise you're going to be kind of going around in circles trying to keep it watered enough. And so that can also lead to leaf drop as well. due to the soil moisture issue.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. It's a trigger word for you. I get that though, because people really have so much fear around watering and am I doing it right? And is this wrong? Or I think plant parents can be so hard on themselves.
Absolutely.
If your plant's doing good, you're probably fine. And even if you kill a plant, that's okay. It's okay. It's all a learning opportunity.
Live and learn.
Live and learn. Yeah, totally.
And with overwatering, if I can just interject one more thing, mm-hmm. the reason it causes issues is because people get so scared to water properly that oftentimes they go too far in the other direction. And, you know, they might even measure out, you know, for their succulent, a tablespoon of water, but then you're going to end up dehydrating your roots.
Yeah.
So you're not thoroughly watering. All your roots are not... Well, what I like to say is, do you care about all of your roots or just some of them?
Yeah, right?
All of your roots need enough water, but you need to also consider other factors as well. If your soil's not drying out enough, then you have to look at some of your other factors. And that I talk about that a lot in my book.
Yeah, no, totally. Agreed. What about my plant looks healthy, but the branches are all over the place. Why is this happening?
I actually tied up my rubber plant the other day because it was kind of going all over the place as well. What we have to remember indoors. So indoors, we don't have the benefit of wind. Right? Mm-hmm. So that actually wind will actually strengthen plants outside. And so we don't have air circulation indoors. We don't have wind. And so it's not going to reinforce our plants. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's okay to tie up your plant. So I have a bamboo stake that I shoved literally right through the root ball. And I gently tied the branches that were creeping over. And actually one time, I remember, I think it was last year, you know, we had a couple of friends over for dinner. And I hadn't realized how far over my rubber plant had crept over the couch. And one of my friends was kind of, you know, going like this, leaning over. Oh, I can't, this rubber plant's attacking me here. And so there's nothing wrong with staking up your plants.
Preach. I love it. What about tiny white spots on my plant's leaves?
So that's an interesting one. There's nothing wrong. If you notice those little tiny spots, they're tiny little white spots, and often you'll see them around the perimeter of your leaf. You know, after getting this question, I researched it and investigated it. And apparently the little tiny white dots are called lithocysts. And they're cells that contain calcium carbonate. They're nothing to be worried about. They don't do any harm for your plants. I don't know what their purpose is, but it won't do any harm for your plants if you see those.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes me think of too, like depending on what you're watering your plants with, sometimes those minerals will show up in the plant leaves and you can just wipe them off.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, with the fertilizer that you're using, or maybe calcium from tap water. I use tap water for almost all my plants.
Totally. Okay. What about if I have a variegated rubber plant that has browning edges?
Yeah. So that's another common issue. And I would say in those cases, it's probably due to your soil moisture being off. So either your soil went too dry or your plant stayed too wet. Some people will say, oh, it's due to lighting. Maybe, you know, my plants it's maybe getting too much light. But in my experience, I don't see that. And unless I will bring in this caveat, and I forgot to mention this when you asked about light. Whenever you're increasing light for any plant, even if it's a sun-loving plant, if you're moving a plant to a much higher position of light, whether it's a super sunny window, or especially if you're moving a plant from inside to outside, you have to slowly acclimate your plant. Otherwise, your plant will burn within a matter of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes even for sun-loving plants. Your plant has to acclimate to higher light. So that even goes if you buy a plant from, you know, in the mail and it's spent time in a dark box, you can't just shove it into full sun right away. It's going to burn. Same thing goes moving a plant from indoors to outdoors. You have to do it really slowly and to put it in full shade at first and gradually increase the light. So in that case, then yes, that could be causing the browning. But typically for variegated plants, they are not as forgiving as their non-variegated counterparts. So try to avoid your potting mix from going completely dry, or on the other end, you know, don't let it sit in water for too long. because they're more sensitive to those factors.
Yeah, I also feel like this is a great time for us to just kind of insert a disclaimer as well of so many of these troubleshooting things can mean so many different things for people. Because you talk about brown edges, just like you said, it could be a water thing. It could be a humidity thing. Maybe your plant's next to the radiator and it's getting super dry heat. It could be fungal. It could be so many things. So this is what you're generally seeing. It's not a once, you know, a catch-all for everything, but these are generalized answers to 90% of plant situations this will be the answer to, but know that you might be, you know, the 10% that it varies. So it's all about experimentation and figuring it out. Then one other question from a Garden Society member. My rubber tree has long aerial roots. I think this means it's happy, but do they grow better in slightly cooler conditions? It hasn't been unusual for my plant room to be 65 to 70 on cooler days and up to 80 in the summer.
So aerial roots, this is a cool thing. And you don't really see them that often, I feel like, indoors. And it could be maybe from an age perspective as well. But if you see these plants growing out in nature, in warm climates that are growing in the ground and you have these huge plants, they actually send out these aerial roots and, you know, from the plant itself. And then they kind of drape down until they touch the soil and then they grow and then they start to grow into the soil. So that is a perfectly natural thing that these plants do. And as far as temperature goes, that's a perfectly acceptable temperature range. I mean, I always like to say for most of the plants that we grow indoors as houseplants, if you're comfortable, your plant's going to be comfortable as well. So 65 to 80, that's perfectly, perfectly wonderful temperatures for your rubber plant.
Okay, cool. So I loved this troubleshooting. If someone was like me who is getting their first rubber plant or maybe has a rubber plant or two and looking to kind of expand their collection, what are your favorite varieties? What would you suggest?
Sure. So I would say if you've never grown a rubber plant before, I would say start with a non-variegated rubber plant, just because they're going to be a little bit easier and not as finicky as a variegated one. So Robusta would be a great one to start with. And if you love variegated plants, either depending on the color, I guess it's just a preference, you can either go with the Tinicky or the Ruby cultivar. Those are both beautiful cultivars.
Yeah. And I would say don't overlook that Burgundy one too, man. That's a beautiful plant.
That's a beautiful one too. Yeah. It's all personal preference. But I would say if you've never grown one, do a non-variegated one until you're comfortable with it. And then go ahead and get a variegated one once your plain green one is thriving and you're comfortable with the care.
Totally. Or if you want to nerd out and learn a thing or two about variegation, you could buy a green one and a variegated one, put them next to each other and observe how differently they grow. That's kind of a fun idea too.
That's a great one too.
I love it. This has been so fun. I'm so excited for you to be publishing your book. I love that I got to be a part of you receiving your book for the first time. The cover looks beautiful. So where did you come up with the name of Houseplant Warrior?
I don't know where it came from. It just kind of popped in my head with, you know, so many people struggling to try to figure houseplants out. And so the term just popped in my head as a way to, okay, I'm going to get this. I'm going to be a warrior. I'm going to understand what plants like, what they don't like. And I'm finally going to get this. So it really all stemmed from all the feedback and questions that I've been getting from my readers, from my blog, and also, you know, the numerous questions on Instagram. It kind of triggered that title, probably.
Love that. So it's called Houseplant Warrior. What's the subtitle?
7 Keys to Unlocking the Mysteries of Houseplant Care.
Awesome. Who is the book geared for? Is it for an ultimate beginner? Is it for someone who's had plants for a while looking to expand?
So all of the above, I would say it would particularly be useful to the beginner or anyone that has been growing even houseplants for a while, but they're struggling with them in any way. Or, you know, maybe they're reading conflicting advice and they really don't know what to do or what works, what doesn't. The main focus in my book, besides talking about, you know, all the main topics of light, watering, fertilizing, repotting, soil mixes, all of that stuff, is I try to teach my readers how to observe. For example, what happens, you know, when we Google something, why does my rubber plant have a yellow leaf? The first thing normally that pops up on a lot of sites, are going to tell you you're overwatering. But then people don't even observe. They don't actually feel their soil to see if they, quote, overwatered. So it's, and oftentimes when I ask someone to feel their soil, they say, well, I overwater my plant, it's suffering. Once they touch their soil, it's bone dry. They did not overwater. In fact, they did the opposite.
They underwatered.
So I teach people to ask the right questions and to observe their plants. And then at that point, it's a process. I'm trying to teach people to become their own plant doctor.
I love it. What's your favorite of the seven principles?
My gosh, probably the troubleshooting chapter. And what I did there was I took all the common questions that I get over and over and over and over again. And I go through kind of like almost like an interview format, asking the question and then the response back from the plant parent. And so I have case studies that I created that were all based off of real world questions and resolutions that my readers
had. That's really super clever.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, where can people get the book and where can people find you in case they want to follow you or read your blog?
Yeah. So people can find me on from my blog, ohiotropics.com. And I have a book section in the menu. So if you just hover over that, you can see Houseplant Warrior pop up. I also have a button just on the main page for Houseplant Warrior. You can also find me on Instagram at Ohio Tropics. I do have a Facebook page as well. I do have a YouTube channel, which I'm trying to do more of. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do it all.
Yeah,
it is. It really is. And then one last thing real quick for my book. I also teach a holistic approach to houseplant care. So you cannot just be focused on watering and ignore light and the size of your pot and your potting mix. It all works together. So understanding your conditions and all those aspects of houseplant care, they all work together. You cannot just focus on watering or just light. They all work together and they all affect each other.
Love that. Well, I can't wait to get my hands on a copy. Thank you for stopping by and talking rubber plants. I'm so happy we finally got to give the humble rubber plant an episode of its own. The links to Raphael's book and obviously all of his socials will be in the show notes. So thanks so much, Raphael. I'm very excited for you.
Thank you so much, Maria.
All right, plant friends, if this episode has you rethinking the humble rubber plant, maybe it's time to give it a spot in your collection. Go to your local garden center. I suggest buying a bigger one than a smaller one to make sure that you can kind of get that impact immediately and also make sure that you're pruning them to trigger new growth. If you have an iconic rubber plant already, also please share it and tag me at Growing Joy with Maria on social media. I'd love to see it and share it with our community and hear from you what your favorite species are. I am always going to be, I did this interview with Raphael like 4 years ago and Ficus Belize is definitely still my favorite. I love that pink variegation, but I really love just like the standard dark glossy green Ficus elastica plant as well. You can't go wrong with it. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and until next time, keep growing joy.
Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.